which we offer to all, in the times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi, Saranam, Gacchami, Dusyampi, Satyampi, Sattva. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Dharmam, Saranam, Gacchami, Dusyampi, Satyampi, Sattva. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Sangham Saranam Gacchami, Dusyampi, Satyampi, Sattva. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Vidaya. Homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the content of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates illusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confer my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 great prohibited precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies or practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics. Nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious and bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply bow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma. And I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Nduhyampi tatyampi sadaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face a new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. We are here to end suffering. And ending suffering is more important than anything. We will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Well, I noticed a phrase that Sherry has used a lot in the Guidance Week email class for the year long, and it's a process plan versus a content plan. And we talked a lot about, you know, it's kind of the heart and soul of what we talk about living in the process. And I've been looking at that in terms of getting out of the conversation, in terms of the 9 a.m. radio show and what's going on in the world and everything. And also around food, which is those kind of some big karmic areas, those three. I'm not sure where to go.
So getting out of the conversation, the 9 a.m. show is kind of the where that came from. The content, you could say that that sprang from, and food all seem like three big kind of karmic. Are you saying those are contents that you're looking at with this profit plan versus content plan?
I had a occasion recently to talk with someone who's all into the whole political world, and she was just talking really animated about what's going on, really, and the neoliberals and why the Democratic Party should have done this, and then in 2020 it could really be good for the the marginalized, because And I was just listening to her, and I had that image, that same feeling that Beth described on the Good News Update, just sitting at the table, just smiling and watching everybody just sort of go on and on. And I was enjoying, but I wasn't in it. And there must have been a day that I would have just been in it, thinking that that's really going somewhere.
Right, but the content of what? So in 2020, I could help her.
Ultimately, we're going to help people.
Right.
Ultimately, but it's got to be like this, right? We got a setback, but that, and so it's not from a bad place. Good place in the heart. But what I saw when I was talking to her is that that sort of like a like a false wall. Mm-hmm. You know, you think that's the end, you know, of the room.
You think that's the end, meaning the content?
Like, okay, when this all happens, then we really will help a lot of people, and it'll, you know, the country will work better, or whatever, you know. But knowing that there's a process plan, having a process plan orientation, you just know that that's an illusion. You know?
Yeah.
In fact, I even said, because you were talking about, you know, the backlash of 2010 after Obama was in, and then there was going to be a backlash, you know, all of this stuff. And I said something like, well, does it? Because I was seeing the duality, the back and forth nature of everything.
Right.
And I kind of suggested that. It doesn't seem like everything is just always in response to backlash and response to something, you know? And there was this pause. Well, no, because, you know, and then it went on. And so, but what I could see in that was the freedom of stepping out of the duality. Stepping out of the duality that any content plan is by nature.
Right. So any content plan by nature is really going to probably be in one of those dualistic camps. And isn't it just going to swing to the other side and then swing to the other side? And then, but that the freedom of being able to step completely outside of that and to see process instead of to be so focused on the content.
Yes. And that's what I'm seeing about the getting out of the conversation. Because I think what's happening is that ego is using that content just like everything else, setting up a duality. I'm either
so
in the
2010.
2016 was the year, right? Now we're gonna have to do this 2017.
So
we're gonna have
that. Okay, we can all we just made a little wrong move. The neo awareness.
There's always a neo something.
Yeah.
And so if getting out of the conversation is looked at in a process perspective, then all the pressure's off.
Yeah.
There's no hurry.
Yeah.
The goodness that is there underneath is just there.
Right.
It's that quote that I've never really identified with, but I've always really remembered and resonated with, that Sherry has shared with us from C.S. Lewis, that the longing is as sweet as something.
Right, the longing for God
is the sweetness.
Yeah.
You know, even though it hurts so good in that way, you know, that feels so good. And so, in a way, in a process orientation, that can be experienced deeply.
Yeah. Because it's that interesting place, isn't it, where if I'm truly giving everything to the process of being out of the conversation, then does it matter if I'm out of the conversation or not? In the sense of only that conversation would be assessing whether or not I'm in or out of the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So all of the attention is on that process, and there's no idea that I'm going to finish something or get somewhere, and then what?
Yes, and then what? Yeah, so I was just sitting in this last bit and seeing, you know, there's just stuff talking, you know, arising. And what I saw is, if I'm just sort of sitting at the proverbial Thanksgiving table, just smiling, you know, then none of it's a problem. There is no, you gotta get out of the conversation.
Right.
Because I'm just present.
Right.
I can be present to a conversation about how much my hermitage needs to be cleaned. And it's a big deal. I can be present to any kind of conversation.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is a piece of what you're saying, but when you were talking about being in that conversation with this person, you said something along the lines of, you know, I could just sit there and enjoy. I can't remember if that was the word you used, but something like that. And I wonder if, at least the way you described her speaking, there was a process of, I don't know how you would describe that, but enthusiasm and care and
love and
all those things.
Yeah.
Right? As you say, it's not come from a bad place.
Yeah.
And I think that's the piece that we often miss.
Yeah.
That, you know, I was talking to someone who was pretty devastated by what was going on and described, you know, crying, and then sort of went on to label it fear. And I think, gosh, that's so interesting, because what I hear in it is such a deep level of care. right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's just it. It just lands with them. There's nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Right. You know. So I even the content itself is sort of interesting and fine.
Right.
You know. It's just not the end.
Exactly.
It's just not the criteria measuring stick, end all be all.
Yeah.
And to just get to see that.
Yeah.
You know, it's just beautiful.
Yeah.
And so liberating.
Yeah. It reminds me of sort of delighting in all of the seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and not being disappointed that it's going to be winter again. But I've tried so hard to, you know, and now it's going to be winter again. Of course it's going to be winter again.
Yeah.
Right? And then it will be spring, and then it will be summer.
Yeah.
And then fall. And then winter. And then it will be spring, and then, right?
Yeah. Food is another one that I like that for me. You know, it's like, there's just never an end to what we can see in our process with food.
Right.
And if all I'm focusing on is, okay, I've got to, you know, I've got to follow this plan, or I've got to be this weight, or I've got to feel this way in all my clothes, or I've got to, you know, all those ends.
Yeah,
they're just the dead ends, you know, and totally misses the joy of the relationship.
Truly, because if the process is the outcome, then if we're talked out of having all of our attention on the outcome, we actually can't ever have the outcome because the process is the outcome.
Yeah.
Right? So if we don't get to have our attention in the process, right? So in that case, the result of how I feel in my clothes, or am I following the right program, or, you know, all those outcomes. But instead to realize, well, this is, I'm going to probably be in this journey my entire life.
Yeah.
Right? So just enjoy the process of it.
Yeah.
Be interested and curious.
Well, and one last point, and it fits in with both the conversation, the politics, and the food, is because being in the process orientation is the only way I can be truly present to in love.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm all wrapped up in who's going to be president in 2020, or how we're going to maneuver, I'm blind to to loving what's right here.
Yeah.
Maybe the people who are actually hurting now,
or
my own pain now, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the same way with all of the content, getting out of the conversation. Mm-hmm. I'm so obsessed with getting out of the conversation, like, where is the love for this human right now?
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, and what I thought when you said that was, that orientation of, you know, I've got my attention out on the future outcome, assumes there's something wrong.
Yeah.
Whereas it's that place that Sherry was talking about a couple of weeks ago on the morning show of, you know, there's nothing wrong.
Yeah.
And that doesn't necessarily mean it's all okay, or that we're not going to participate in this, or that we're not, you know, whatever it is. And it seems like that orientation that you're talking about of loving here, now, is that orientation. There's nothing wrong. And how am I called to be in this moment?
Yeah. Because then from that place, I might know that, ooh, this park is getting kind of trashy. I want to pick a clean this park, you know, or whatever it happens, it might happen to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The musing of this month, the 12 gifts of practice, brilliant once again, how what is here is used as the grist for the mill, so to speak. I had just an amazing experience while one of the times I was reading through that, that all of a sudden I just had the experience that what's being communicated, I have to use the words because I'm talking, but it wasn't a head thing.
Mm-hmm.
There was this experience that this is talking about life and how life has everything, and how as a human being part of life, there is nothing needed. There is nothing that needs to be wanted. The only thing that keeps a human being from living there and experiencing that is the relationship with egocentric karmic conditioning.
Yeah.
It was an experience. It dropped from this, you know, mental
yep.
concept that I've been hearing about for literally several decades,
mm-hmm.
which is the basis of practice.
Yeah.
It's been there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It just dropped down.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see that that subtle place of assuming that there is something wrong, that there is something that needs to be fixed and changed,
mm-hmm.
is the process of keeping one from being living in life, which is glorious. I mean, it's not only nothing wrong, it's
right.
everything,
yeah.
I want to say right, but everything gorgeous, beautiful, wonderful.
It makes us realize why the conversation has to be constant, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it's a full-time job. I think it's not like a little thing we set up. Remaining mm-hmm. ignorant is a full-time job.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So the conversation has to be at us constantly, because if we accidentally get present for even a moment,
yeah.
we experience what you're saying, that, wow, life is extraordinary. Everything about it is extraordinary. I'm cared for perfectly in every moment. I don't need to do anything. Life is complete as it is. There's nothing
right.
to be added on. Nothing to be. Nothing to
right.
want. Nothing to.
And I and everyone else and everything else is a unique and beautiful expression of that.
Yeah.
And so then the next step was, of course, ego had to try to get me out of that real quick. That
mm-hmm.
was just way beyond what right. humans allowed,
yeah.
has been allowed. And so it wasn't actually an attack, if, you know, because I think I was just too present
mm-hmm.
to take that. But it was, gosh, it's amazing that could elude you for And what I saw in that is that no, every single moment of that is what
exactly.
allows this being to get to a place to have
exactly.
an experience.
Yeah.
Just that
yeah.
daily
yep.
going through the planer, planing
yep.
off those
mm-hmm.
crusty layers of self-hate, allowing the person. Allowing the person to get to a place where she could be open to that amount of love.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And then, you know, as you say that, it's like you can almost be grateful for that gentle process.
Mm-hmm.
That it happened.
It didn't always feel so gentle, but
right.
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But as you say that, you know, how could
slowly
she, so many years? Well, because that's the, it's like life is leading it perfectly. Life's timing is perfect. You know, just a little bit here, a little bit
mm-hmm.
there, a little bit
mm-hmm.
here.
Mm-hmm. And all of those, all along those stages, it wasn't all just brutal being pushed through the planer and carved off. There were experiences of life in
mm-hmm.
that way.
Exactly.
Those moments of grace where the human was getting the experience that that's what's really there when everything else stops.
Yes.
All that other condition stuff
exactly.
stops.
Yeah.
And so that was like, I think probably, oh, they talk about it in Christianity, the moments of grace, or there's a word for it, where you're given these gifts along the way, you know, kind of to...
Is it consolation?
It is, consolation. And so you have that experience to know it's really there, and so you keep going.
Yeah.
And,
you know, we can know that so, because when we have an experience like you're talking about, where it drops in so deeply as an experience,
mm-hmm.
that, at least in my experience, it sure seems like what's happening there is all those other times that you've experienced that are adding to the deep, experience. You know, the deep place that, because, you know, first time it's kind of like, oh, that resonates with something.
But yeah, that's a fluke.
Right.
Something happened.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, that insight means experience place.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you keep having the insight on a deeper and deeper level because there's more and more experience down there that points to it.
And there's been more and more planing off of the self-hate that has made it
really right.
impossible to receive.
Right.
It's just heartbreakingly beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, pray that the heart wide open.
Wide open.
Yeah. Thank you.
Rob. Geez, I have two things. So, so the first is, it looks like it's going to be my theme for the rest of the my time here is my experience with the shower. And
the shower is my teacher.
it really, 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 really is. Mm-hmm. It so I talked about it on Thursday, and Sherry said, "This is what I heard her say."
Okay.
Sometimes I wish I did have a recorder because I did, can't remember.
Right.
But I think what she said were two things. One is, why does egocentric karma conditioning, self-hate, dislike the shower routine so much?
Mm.
And then the other thing weird I was talking about, you know, wanting to get it right. She goes, why is it so important to get it right?
Mm.
So I've taken those two things and I've been, you know, I've been thinking about it, it's come through. And what I see at this point are like this is a core issue. There's like multiple wheels of karma. And they like interlock and they loop back. Mm-hmm. And it's like from the second the task is assigned, mm-hmm. all the way through, there are all these triggers mm-hmm. that are happening.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, so I'm starting a new Making Change for Good.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to pick something really simple.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, I came here to, you know, to really end suffering. And this is a big, big thing, which is maybe not a good idea, but I'm probably going to get more support here than I would get anywhere if I couldn't do it at home. So I got to do it, you know? I got to jump into this, you know? And it's interesting. There's a ton of fear. There really is a ton of fear. And
which we can know is ego's fear of being exposed, right?
Yeah, but it's terrifying. It's terrifying.
When we're identified with it, yeah.
Yeah. So I decided that and I feel pretty good about it and I realized that I need to do process mapping for all these little mm-hmm. wheels of karma that I'm seeing. And part of it is I'm realizing that a lot of it's unconscious or preconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to bring it up to the surface mm-hmm. so I can see it when it's happening mm-hmm. rather than, you know, a long time later.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very interesting place to be. It's a terrifying place to be and it's very interesting at the same time. It's really
terrifying.
It's terrifying because what conditioning says that if I go down this path and I approach this path, it's going to be an utter disaster.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be so bad that I'm going to go running out of this place.
Mm-hmm.
That it's going to hurt so bad, I'm just going to leave. You know? And it's like, and then it's just not worth it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yet we get to a point where we know it is, don't we?
Well, what seems to have surfaced for me is the whole shower routine is like, it's the core of my whole work style.
Mm-hmm.
It's everything, you know, like I've always noticed that there's this real big difference between my social life and my work life.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it revolves around this.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, my God, it's so important.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because you spend most of your life in work.
Yeah.
And it's a continuous process of suffering.
Yeah. You know, and Rob, as you're describing it, it just strikes me so much that, you know, when we find the willingness that I project you're describing, when we just get to a crossroads with something in our life, something that essentially we've been being blackmailed with, for so long, when we just get to the point of no more, right? And there is that fear that comes up. But truly, what we see, and I'm sure if you look back, you'd see instances of this in your own life, in your own practice, that what we see is that fear is that is the imaginary wall that keeps us from walking across that line of freedom, right? So it puts, you know, all of the the good stuff, right? All of the freedom, the awareness, the realizing that we're completely adequate to our lives, all those things in a box and labeled it danger. So we won't go there. And so, yes, as you say, you know, to be willing to do this. And will ego kick up a huge storm that makes it seem, quote, painful and difficult and all those things? Yes. But will it actually be painful and difficult for Rob? My best guess would be not at all.
Right.
That there's huge liberation that's possible for us when we become willing to turn and look straight at something.
Yeah. Yeah, my experience when it's happened in the past is it absolutely is a real wall. It's a total, complete, real wall until I walk into it.
Exactly.
And then it
dissolves. Exactly.
And,
yep.
And that's how it is, you know.
So powerful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wow. Right? Because, I mean, that's a great place for reporting. Right? Because, yeah, to the guy who's standing in front of the wall to say, well, that's not a real wall, it's like, well, you're an idiot. Obviously, that's a real wall. I can even knock my finger on it. It hurts my knuckles. You know, it's a real wall. So to have recordings that say, oh my gosh, I, with everything in me, I thought that was a real wall. And I'm here to tell you that it was imaginary. We walked through it. It wasn't really there. You know, so not to sort of tell that guy to whom the wall is real, you know, get over yourself or whatever that might be, but to help him, to support him, to see it isn't real. I know it feels real right now, but it isn't real. And I'm here with you. You know, I'm going to help you every step of the way.
Well, that's interesting when you mentioned recorder, because I don't record and listen probably, I don't think I record and listen as much as other people. I listen a lot. I actually don't record. I don't have those conversations with myself, nearly as much. And
yes.
So, well, yeah, and because I'm like at the point where like, it doesn't matter how that I don't want to do it, just grab the recorder, because the stakes are getting so high. They're getting really high. Are you going to miss this? You're going to miss it. If you don't pick up the recorder, just pick it up. So I did. And, you know, it is helpful. And, you know, and I'll say right now, the reaction is like, I don't want it, like, I don't reach for it. I don't see it as a comfort. I just have to realize that just pick it up, eventually it'll come around.
That's right. Because it's the same process. There's a wall. I don't want to. It's not going to do anything. But, you know, whatever the language would be for you, right? And then over and over and over, you prove to yourself, you do it anyway. You do it anyway. With no looking at the results or how it feels or, right? Because that just gives the voice more ammunition. Well, you weren't in total bliss, so what's the, right? So just doing it, doing it, doing it, doing it. And remembering that the reason you're doing it is love.
Yeah, that is true. That is my last recording. Focus on that. Well, it took 4 minutes to get there.
But can you imagine? Well, it took 4 minutes to get there. Right? Ridiculous.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was really interesting. But, so usually when I do something like that, and I don't do it very often, is I record, and then something clicks, and I'm like, oh. There's something clicks, something releases.
Yep.
And sometimes it takes like 30 seconds, and this was like a 4 minute thing, and I know that the thing that made it click was that, like, you know, don't I care about myself enough to do this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly so.
You know, and that's when I was like, oh, that's
and
it.
You keep recording until that click happens.
Right.
I can promise you, I've gone way more than 4 minutes.
So the other thing I want to share about is just to share about it, so yesterday we did the sit for 30 minutes, walk for 30, walk meditation. We did that for 3 hours. I have a lot of upper back pain, usually almost every day. Sometimes I get away with it in the morning, I don't have it, almost always in the afternoon. So I did that. I had a particularly bad 30 minute sit, first sit. I was in so much pain. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, oh my gosh, I got 3 hours of this.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the only time I think I've been here when I was just like, this hurts so bad, it's not even worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I don't have a choice, either to stay or just go to your room and just pack and leave. Mm-hmm. And I really, 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 really thought about just leaving, you know? And basically, the only thing that held me together is like, I can't leave until I at least talk about it
mm-hmm.
and see what freaks out about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wrote a little note and to the guidance master, and basically my conclusion is, unfortunately, there's probably nothing that can be done about it. I don't know when it's going to happen right again. That's 3 hour, you know, thing.
Right.
But there's probably not something to be counted down. It can't be like, oh, okay, no, well, no, you don't have to do it. You're going to have to do it. And I don't know. And basically, worrying about it is not going to change what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So it's like, so this is from like a prayer book I have, but it's the essence of the quote is, you know, the path to freedom, there are barriers and obstacles.
Mm.
And to me, this is like a barrier and obstacle.
Yeah.
I don't know how I'm going to get through it.
Yeah. And it's such good training on every level, isn't it, from what you described? Because we're not in control. And those are the kind of things that remind us of that, right? We think we can have control of our life experience and arrange things just out, and we truly cannot. And you decided to communicate, which is so completely the place. So not trapping ourselves inside, well, this is just how it is, and there's nothing that can be done about it, so that's fine. I'm just going to, right? That's going to be one side of the duality. But to just communicate about it, not knowing, because we don't know. We don't know anything. So we communicate, and then we have the opportunity, like it sounds like you did yesterday afternoon, to get to prove to ourselves that we can be okay. Right? And being in a lot of pain could be part of being okay. Because the thing is, for all of us, no matter how much we're loved, no matter how much practice we've done, no matter how much, there are always going to be times and places in our lives where we're in situations that are super challenging. So that's part of our training, is to know that we can be okay even when those things arise.
You know, it related to that, what I thought about somewhere in that whole process, or maybe afterwards, was there. I know there are people in Sangha who have chronic pain all the time.
Exactly so.
And
exactly so.
My compassion for them, I honestly don't know how they do it.
Yeah.
Like, I know my mother went in the last 6 months of her life, she had really bad pain almost every day, continuously. And, you know, you think you have the compassion for your own mother.
Right.
But boy, you go through it, and you're thinking like, what if I had to be like this continuously?
All day, every day, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like it's already been talked about. It's like kind of like, it's like bittersweet. There's a sadness, but there's just such a preciousness about it. And
it opens your heart.
It opens your heart.
Yeah.
And it could be very difficult to dismiss somebody else's pain after that.
Well, it's fascinating because the same sort of connections I'm hearing about showers and things like that are the same connections I'm seeing in my own experience. I'm being told not to talk about this because I've already talked about it twice this morning.
I agree.
But third time's the charm, right? So,
I like the MCM, there's a daily limit.
That's right.
Tomorrow maybe you can talk about it, but not today.
Right. So the value of communicating, because I started talking about something and then insights dropped in. And so that's the gift of communicating about. So what I was communicating about initially was the practicing, I choose unconditional love. Mm-hmm. And I made a recording and have listened to it some, not continually, but some. And I find also that coming up just in the course of the day.
Right. In other words, the attention is being trained to that. So even if you're not listening to the recording, you find that.
I find it just arising.
Yeah.
And often, arising at a time when I'm either just kind of fruitlessly distracted or upset about something. So helpful times to break that chain, break that. And so what I was seeing today about it was how, if I really go to, I choose unconditional love, I also go to there's nothing wrong, and I go to living and I don't know.
Huh, yeah.
Because I don't know what that means.
That's true. Yeah.
And so, and at first, you know, one night I woke up and I couldn't go back to sleep, so I was listening to that, and what arose was I don't know what that means. I don't know what it means to choose unconditional love. Mm-hmm. And at first that was disturbing.
Right.
And then it was like, honestly, I don't know what it means. And, and what I got was, of course I don't know what it means, because it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
What it is, it's a willingness to be open to, in any given moment, responding to a space you've created for life to drop in.
Yeah.
And what it looks like, mm-hmm. and any given moment, I might not even know that that's what it is that's
yeah.
happening.
Yeah.
And what it looks like in this moment may have nothing to do with what it looks like in the next moment.
Yeah.
And and so to be in that level of I don't know feels ironically in this time, because it's also coming up with regard to the political things, mm-hmm. feels like a huge challenge and a huge relief both.
Yeah. It really does go back to the very first conversation, doesn't it? Because that place of, okay, I choose unconditional love. Okay, so that means if in 2020 we could get it right, because that's where conditioned mind wants to take
yeah.
all of us,
yeah.
is into a plan, how that looks, and even rules, and, you know, making people fall, or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But to realize, I truly don't know, because it isn't something.
Mm-hmm.
It's a process.
Right.
And that we can train ourselves to live in that process. And if we do, then in each moment with whatever's coming up, there's that, it's just now, I don't know what that's going to look like, because I won't know until I'm in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And you said there's a huge relief with that. And then what was the other thing? Huge relief and
challenge. Is that what I said?
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's what I said.
Something along those lines.
Yeah. Yeah. What's so fascinating is the process is simply to say that or to ask the question.
Yeah.
The process has nothing to do with what the results,
yeah.
what the content is. And there's such a desire to have the process. You know the content.
Yeah. And that's the challenge part.
And
the challenge kind of like Cameron was saying. You know, the only challenge is that the egocentric karma conditioning self-hate is at us all the time,
mm-hmm.
trying to get us to concretize the
mm-hmm.
process, right?
Right?
To kill it, to get it into content.
Right.
But the relief is, right, I don't have to do that.
Yeah.
I don't have to do that. I don't have to do that.
Yeah.
To remind ourselves over and over and over again.
And it's funny because I was listening when Becca was speaking earlier about this conversation. And you know, being able to sit there and have the conversation going, I mean, I know that conversation about, well, I'll go with this, we'll do this, and when I think the comment was something like being able to sit there and just, you know, it's all fine, and
yeah.
and what arose in me is, oh, that's such who we, you know,
yeah,
and that's when I really need to step back into, I choose unconditional love,
yeah,
because.
Yeah.
If I go the root of that sui,
yeah.
that's also the root of because I know.
Right.
And
yeah.
and so that's the relief part.
Yeah.
Because I know what I do know is going in the direction of that sui, and I know how it is just disaster.
It's disaster.
It's just a catastrophe.
It's suffering, it's not assisting anyone, it doesn't help anything.
No.
Yeah. I mean we can, you know, sort of guess that's how we all got where we are now, right?
That's right.
On some micro level, each of us internally is doing that process.
Yeah. And so to go into a number of political situations I'm about to go into, and with that, with saying that, I choose unconditional love,
wow.
and raising the question, what's most compassionate for all,
wow.
is a huge challenge, and it feels like, as you were also talking about earlier, thank God I've been practicing for 20 years.
Yeah, okay.
You know, because,
yeah, okay.
because there's... That's, I don't know how one would have learned another way to come into that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's interesting, kind of, as you were talking, I was getting that image. I forget, is it Thoreau who used to do that thing of walk through the hills and, oh, and then we're going to build the, you know, home over here. You know, imagine all of these things, right? And really have no intention of necessarily doing any of them, right?
Just enjoying the imagining.
And I just thought that it's interesting because in some ways, participating on the content level of life could be that same process, right? So it's not that, you know, I have to totally exit and whatever.
Oh,
yeah. It's all about the, you know, which I think is what you've described many times.
of that place of completely, wholeheartedly, just right there in it,
mm-hmm.
coming from unconditional love and not knowing,
mm-hmm.
boy, that's powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's actually the only place that's powerful.
Yeah, that's truly powerful.
Yeah,
exactly. That has a sustaining power.
Yeah,
you know, not something that's going to dominate for the, you know, this side of duality until the other side swings back.
And then also, I just wanted to say what came up for me when you're talking about these things that we fear and the conditioning puts in the box,
mm-hmm.
and we're afraid to open the box.
Right.
So I learned one time that, you know, there's the story of Pandora's box,
right.
and she opens the box and all hell breaks loose.
Mm-hmm.
The original version of that story was she opens the box and all the gifts and fruits of life flow from her. Yeah. And so, and we have been taught what's in the box is going to kill us and is awful.
Yeah.
But in fact,
wow.
it's all the source of life that flows out of that box and we open it.
That's huge, but the myth has even turned
yep.
to that.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah. That's a lot. So, it's so funny because conditioning projects out onto everybody else that they're having a pain-free, blissful fit. Especially the monks.
That's normal for it to just walk around and check in. Right?
Yeah.
He's doing great, and he's doing great, and they're loving it.
And they're, and they are just able to sit and walk without any issue at all. And I mean, I was able to before the sit walk fit, because I kind of knew, you know, okay, you've been having some pain, and let's check in. So I checked in with the mentor, and it's like, okay, I'm going into this. You know, help. And
that is what you were saying to the mentor.
Yeah, before it happened.
Yeah.
And the mentor came back with, okay, we've done this before, and you've experienced pain before, and you've been able to breathe through it and really get kind of a distance on it of like, yeah, that's pain, but what I'm experiencing is just being here,
mm-hmm.
kind of sense. Mm-hmm. And so having that reminder, and then what dropped in as we were doing it was this real place of not fixing,
mm-hmm.
of not trying to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens is I inevitably, I'm sitting there and I'm trying to, you know, make little micro movements to, you know, adjust it and everything. And it was like, and the less I tried to change it or fix it, the less painful it was. To the point where in the seated part, it was raining, the heater was turning on, and all of a sudden I had this place of, that's what I am. All I am is the experience.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. All of it, the rain, the mm-hmm. sitting, the pain, the heater turning on, mm-hmm. and then just this, I mean, it lasts, okay, you know, here's conditioning.
Well, it lasts in a second.
And what was so fascinating about that was that I went back to my Hermitage and I started recording about it, and I said, well, I had this really cool experience, you know, sitting and blah, blah, blah. And the mentor came over and said, well, wait a minute, let's really talk about that experience. Like, what did you really... And all of a sudden, it became this place of where conditioning would have said, yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
You know, yeah, it was there.
Yeah, whatever.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it really became for the human, or, you know, for authenticity to just go, oh, that was great. You know, that was just the gift from Pandora's box, maybe, or, you know, something like that. So,
and you know what, as you say that, Beth, that just seems so helpful about it, sort of the insight and experience thing that we were looking at earlier, is it just seems like that encouragement from the mentor to really get in there and explore that and talk about it expands the experience in a sense, so it makes the landing pad larger for the next time when we start to have an experience, it's like, oh, yeah.
Right,
we have that experience. We know that experience. We know that place.
Exactly. It's like a reminder to say, you know what? We've been here before. We've actually been here before. And I'll hold your hand.
Yeah.
And I'll be there if it becomes, you know, so challenging that you're just like, you know, wanting to.
Yeah.
In fact, before I came up for sit walk, I was like,
well, maybe I'll just be sitting there and then I'll just fall over in pain and like crying, sobbing, and what would they do? And it's like, no,
I bet they don't know either. I bet they would just take it a moment by moment.
Exactly. Like, you know, if that's going to happen, that's okay. Yeah. Like, I could just, like, yeah. I could just say, okay, you know, if that's the worst thing that happens,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
So anyway.
And you know, Beth, it just really underlines in such a beautiful way that everything that happens is everyone's best opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know?
Well, I've had that before where I've, you know, written a note and said, well, I guess this is their spiritual opportunity too, because
right, we're all here doing the same thing, right?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Right, so it's not trying to be nice or be good or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
That each of us truly, whatever comes in our path, that's what we work with.
Yeah, because I've often talked myself out of writing notes because it's like, well, I don't want to bother him, or I don't want to, you know, look whiny, or I don't want to look, you know, this way or that way. And then I started writing notes going, well, this is for all of us. So the other place that really clicked in from the first conversation about content versus process was I didn't really see this until that conversation happened this morning. Was I was walking on the path up here going, this time feels so different for me being at the monastery, and I don't know what it, you know, I don't know what it is. And then it clicked in with the it's the process, not the content. What I'm experiencing is love and acceptance at a place where I've never had that experience before, where mopping, doing a deep clean of the kitchen floor normally would have, you know, sent conditioning into, oh my God, and your back hurts and this and that, and you know, you don't have enough time.
All of that, but your back hurts.
You're not going to have enough time.
Sure.
And I just went, well, let's just see what happens. And as I was doing it, and I'm mopping, and I, you know, and I'm doing this kind of like check with time, but don't make it, like, I've got to, you know, like, this real, you know, gosh, to quote someone, a middle way. But this real place of, I can be in love, and whether I'm mopping the kitchen floor or doing sit-walk-sit, the content actually doesn't matter at all, finally, you know, but finally at that place of just, just being able to do it.
And that's such a good description of how then we turn from trying to avoid or control, you know, to everything. It's freedom, isn't it? Because to everything that comes in my path, that's an opportunity to practice unconditional love with this.
Yeah.
With the pain, with writing the note, with receiving a note, with the receiving note, with something that I'm holding over in pain. With, you know, all of it.
Exactly. 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 And then I have one more thing to add. So the thing that I picked for 30 days making a change was to heed the small voice, to really start catching, you know, more quickly to act on something subtler. So every time I come to the monastery in the very beginning, I like eat everything because I feel deprivation. So, let me rephrase that. Because conditioning tells me I'm being deprived, you know, no sugar, no, and, you know, all the good stuff. And that was in quotes.
Good stuff.
So I was at dinner the other night, I think it was Friday night, and I, you know, had my plate and bowl, whatever it was, and I went, wow, and I just heard this kind of like, this is just enough, you know, like, this is good. And then, you know, out of, you know, conditioning starts seeing other people going back for seconds and things like that. Like, wow, you know, but that was really good. And the struggle I've always had coming here was whenever I've taken seconds of something, it almost never tastes as good as the first time when I, you know, when I'm first eating it. Like, that, but conditioning convinces me that if I have more of it, it will be
even better.
So so I caught on to that this time. It's like, no, it's not going to make it better. And then I heard again something saying, well, just go get more of this. And I went, oh my God, that's a voice.
Wow.
Like I could finally say that's a voice, because the small voice was just like, this is good. You know, this is enough. And then I said, I'm so excited. Thank you so much for listening. then I said, okay, but if Beth really wanted, if Beth really wanted something else, what would she really want? And it was like, how about just a little one more spoonful of this one thing with what's left, and that's it. Went over, got a spoonful. And I mean, heaven.
Yeah.
It was like there was a place for everything, and it was like such care and such, you know, and it.
You know, what's often when you say that is that presence is all we want.
That's it.
You have to be here for it. To receive the information, you know, because life is leading us perfectly, just like Cameron was talking about.
Yes.
And when we're here to receive it, oh, wow.
Yeah, and even, you know, even seeing the conversation, seeing the bamboozle, you know, seeing the wanting to, seeing conditioning wanting to talk me into something, but then entertaining, well, if authenticity really wanted something, you know, giving the opportunity for, I think what you're pointing at, presence of just letting it drop in, you know, how would it feel to have one more spoonful of just this?
Yeah.
And then just really being able, I mean, it's, I, you know,
the image I got was like of a, you know, so you're listening to a radio and there's all that crackling. And then you just get really quiet.
Yeah.
And just tune in and you realize, oh, I can hear it.
Yeah.
I can hear it.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Back there.
Yeah. So I'm just very grateful to be here.
Very fun. Thank you.
Yeah. I love the sound of the process sound. Just how relaxing that sound. To drop into the experience of a process.
Yeah.
You know, the process is present, so the process of unconditional love.
Yeah.
Was really struck by something Sherry said on one of the morning radio shows recently, which was that whatever we're doing, if we're not present, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Because whatever it is that is keeping a pattern in place is going to be in charge of making the decisions, and that's what we're right here.
Yeah.
And I'm just seeing that play out in all sorts of ways, and want to look at a place where what is invested in keeping the suffering plan in place is clearly what's making the decisions, because it keeps them worthy.
Gosh, it's so relaxing as you say that. Just see it as kind of science, right? Oh, okay. And so there must be something in charge of me because it keeps not working. So let's just take a look at that.
Yeah.
Right? It's not like, oh no, why do I keep doing this and what's going on? But just, that's interesting.
Right.
It's just, not
feeling it doesn't feel like a place I'm not taking it personally. It's like that sign says, if I'm not present, the karma is going to be acting itself out to maintain itself.
Yeah.
And that doesn't make me a bad person.
Not at all.
And it's not personal, but that's what's happening.
That's what's happening. So, exactly. Okay. So now that gives me a place to look.
Right. And I could be in a place of despair. Like, oh, why does this keep happening? Right. Why can't I stop it? And I'm so awful. But
I'm a better practitioner, and I could get present, but all of that is this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is never going to become experience present.
No. And doesn't want to.
Doesn't want to. Even though it says it does. But the thing is the karma acting itself out is this thing where, so I have no difficulty getting to a place of, there's a person coming to stay in this hermitage, I'm going to just wholeheartedly make it gorgeous for them, you know, so that you know, you kind of go back in with that energy of presence, because presence is taking care of it, and, you know, just, and then my own hermitage, I don't do that. I find it really challenging to get there. And so what keeps happening is that I keep getting into this sort of survival state where the place is cluttered and a mess,
And it reinforces the survival state, because I go home to that, and it's not nice to be in.
Yeah.
And it builds into an overwhelm, it's this feeling of a state of, like, I can't let anybody see what state I'm living in.
Yeah.
And so there've been all sorts of, like, you know, recording, mentoring, and commitments to do 10 minutes a day, and I keep getting back into a place of this, like, feeling of, it's like what's being played out is like neglect, and not taking care.
So, in other words, like that, the definition of karma on the board, the incessant push towards what I think I did, sort of what we think we deserve, and so are you saying that where you keep ending up is neglect, that that's the karma, it has to end up in neglect.
Yeah, and that thing of, I can't let anybody see what state I'm living in, and that, all that kind of fear and squalor feeling and awful. And so, there's a clue that the karma is
making decisions.
You know, I get home and it's evening, instead of, you know, putting the thing away, I put it wherever.
Where does that go?
Where
does
it go?
You can go anywhere. It doesn't go
where
it goes.
Right, and so the experience is the wall, of both being behind the wall of this is impossible and overwhelming, and also the experience of setting a 10-minute timer and seeing what life can do in 10 minutes and having being in a completely different reality.
Mm-hmm.
But I keep getting into the reality of behind the wall and this is impossible. So. I guess the joking about it is to, like, expose that and give the chance for some freedom. And because what I see about it is what is keeping in place is an illusion of separation.
Yeah.
That there is an other people's hermitage and my hermitage.
Yeah.
And that I don't get included in the wholehearted, gorgeous taking care. And that identification with being me and owning the human, and so I can mistreat her and neglect her because it's matter.
She's mine, and I can decide for her.
Exactly. And also the place of, well, you know, all of that karmic stuff that's going on takes energy away from all of it, and that's what I don't want.
Yeah.
So are you saying that? So there's that 10-minute thing that it sounds like you've been playing with.
Yeah.
Is it that you get talked out of that? So you get back to your hermitage and there's that potential of doing the 10 minutes, but it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, so there can be like a period where there's a keeping that commitment for like a good stretch. And then I think what it is that there's something that happens, like there's a change in the rhythm, like, you know, a busy time or something.
Right.
And that, I think what happens is there's like maybe like an intelligent changing of the karma doing things.
Yeah.
But then the karma comes in and interprets and says, you're back in that survival state, and then I'm in the survival state, and then when the busy time's over, I don't just clean up
that
because I'm all in it.
So interesting. Yeah. So that it could be that there are spans where the 10 minutes are just, it's just not part of the deal. You know, it might even be intelligent, who knows, right? That there aren't the 10 minutes for it. But then by the time circumstances shift around, and it might make sense to get back, you know, you could get back into that routine, the story that's taken over, has capitalized on, has made it seem like, well, okay, you drop down again, and now you're back in that, which is completely energy draining.
Yeah.
Whereas the 10 minutes, I bet, is completely energy building, right? And it doesn't want you to get back into that, you know, open, I'm going to keep my commitment no matter what, that sort of thing.
Yeah,
so it's desperate to shut you back down.
And it's just all the clue that there's some big identification here, because it's like, I remember this process with getting up in the morning, that I tried all sorts of things, and and it was just the disidentifying from, I guess, the person who was pathetic and needed help, and also the person trying to help them, that was the shift.
Yeah.
And I think there's probably that same dynamic.
Yeah.
Going on here, keeping the whole thing in place.
Yeah.
Like someone trying to break free of this karma.
Yeah.
But it's hard.
But right. Like that gets all folded in.
Yeah.
You know, I just had this image of like, you know, putting it on the calendar, which might be handy. So going away, right? And then coming back the next day. And so, you know, getting on the calendar and saying, okay, gosh, we got to kick off Anna coming because Anna's arriving. We've got to get it done before this date because we've got all these other things going on. So yeah. Let's kick that off. Let's make a plan for it because that hermitage needs to be completely ready for her. And so, what's the plan for that?
Oh my gosh, that is like a million miles away from anything that would be available in my That's so brilliant.
Yeah. Because there's completely the ability to have that love and that care and attention to detail. I mean,
because it's a process.
Because it's a process.
Like, yeah.
And it's a process that Anna excels at, right? It's just, and which is so perfect. It's exactly why we're not allowed to do it for this person, right? The places where we excel have to be kept from us. So to completely use all of the external ways that we do that for, quote, someone else, to apply it here.
Yeah, because I think the big spiritual opportunity is that I'm getting to encounter a level of identification where it's my life.
Exactly.
And I'm in charge of it.
Exactly.
And I get to decide.
Yeah.
Because the content of the house, you know, whatever. I'm not really that. You know, because it's so awful like that. Yeah. But, you know, but the process of disidentifying.
Yeah.
The process of unconditional love is the opportunity.
Right. Because, you know, if truly, you know, we were going to put so-and-so in this hermitage and it was a place where we've been storing things or whatever, you have nothing going about that.
Yeah,
right? You just go, okay, well, all right, well, let's see. What do we need to do here? Well, all right, well, we're going to need these things. You know, we might see things we might not even need. Those might be extra now. Those go in the donation to the, you know, we might need an extra box here.
Right.
So we could get a box.
Right.
You know, so there are some things that might need to happen to make it work. And if it were that we were putting someone else in the hermitage, you would do what you needed to do, communicate what you need to communicate, all those things, have to make it work.
And show up, I found the other day, so I had a period of cleaning my hermitage, and I've made like a work note for myself in that spirit of these action steps.
Yeah.
This good, then, and that. And I realized I got stuck with, I don't really bother. Because there's other people going. Yeah?
Right.
And what I'm using as the flag. Mm-hmm. That the karma is making decisions is that I only be a bother.
Yeah.
Because there's no clear flag that the karma is saying, I don't want anybody messing with what I've got going on here.
Yeah, exactly right. Mm-hmm. And I think, if I understood what you were saying earlier, the thing is that can really motivate us is to realize that that energy sucking process is having an impact on us.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, that's the motivation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's not I'm being a bother, it's that I live in this community.
Yeah.
And it's not even, as you say, it's not me.
Yeah.
You know? So we're always taking responsibility for everything that's in our environment.
Yeah.
Including, especially this, because you're the only one who has direct access to that.
Right?
So no one else can cover that.
Right.
So that brings the responsibility even more to the fore.
Mm-hmm.
And so to believe somehow, you know, well, I can't, and I'm not, you know, because that can even be a part of the communication, right? Here, I've got this project going on.
Right.
Here's some things. Does it work now? Because otherwise, we could, you know, put it on the calendar. So right, let's do it. February such and such.
Yeah.
Right, and then when we get to February such and such, we can reassess. Is that, you know? So we're in communication, right? It's not an either or, but it has to be prioritized.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's I think the place where I am now. That this week, that is
so good.
That's going to be the next step to communicate about the process of it, and also these suggestions for these actions I found crumpled. Nothing going about that.
Right.
Okay, now it's time.
Now
like
it's
the, there's a Tony Chauvin quote in the meetings of, if something's still around, it's because it still has something to show us.
Yeah.
And that just brings me to that place of not taking any of it personally and just, okay.
Yeah. I guess we're ready now.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you all.